Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 3:12 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is June 9th, and I thought we'd kick off today and think about inflation and inflationary pressures. So the deficit index that I've created for global governments, all compiled and denominated into US dollars and added together, is up to $2.25 trillion. I think there's a couple of things that are really worth highlighting. The first is that back in the early 2000s, a $250 billion deficit on a global basis was considered a lot of money. So it's up 10 times since then. And the degree of alarm being expressed at that size of deficit on a global basis is comparatively small compared to the kinds of deficits that were being run in the early 2000s, and people were freaking out at the possibility of financial repression. Instead, today we're in the reality of financial repression, and there is a lot less concern being expressed. Now, the other, I think, important point here is that we do see that deficits tend to decrease as bull markets improve, and then they widen out considerably during crises. We certainly saw that in 2008, where the reading at the beginning of 2008 was actually for a surplus, and then it expanded to 1.5 trillion deficits in deficits all at the beginning of 2010. Over the next 8 years, it started to compress again, and then started increasing from the end of 2017 and the beginning of 2018. And of course, that was because of the Trump tax cuts. So we were already in a situation where the deficit was expanding ahead of the pandemic, and then it went into overdrive. So we saw deficits more than double in the space of a year. So they've come in from the absolute high level, and there's little prospect of the deficit coming back down in a big way in the near term, because we're in a very different environment. There's a clear tolerance by governments for higher deficits, and they expect central banks to step in and support their spending measures. So there's a lot of questioning going on right now about what's going to happen in terms of U.S. monetary and fiscal policy. Well, on the fiscal front, they have every intention of spending, and there's an infrastructure bill that's been tabled, and there's the potential at least that it's going to get passed in some measure. 10-year treasury yields continue to compress. So while we can think about all the different factors that are contributing to inflationary pressures, bond investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the fact that this inflationary pop we've seen over the course of the last 6 months is in fact transitory. So I think that's rather important. And we can look at the massive acceleration that we had in lumber and the fact that some of the heat is now coming out of that market as some evidence to support the view that at least some of the supply inelasticity portions of this inflationary trend are about to ease and ease further. Of course, we also have the other side of that equation, where oil prices continue to remain firm and are holding this move above 70. But again, this is an artificial supply deficit, because there's 8 million barrels of oil being held off the market. Well, then there is the other less easy to tackle shortage, which are for semiconductors. The semiconductors index, however, has lost momentum. So we had massive demand for consumer electronics in 2020, and that certainly pushed up demand. And now we have short falls, and there's clear demand from the automotive sector and for other portions of the consumer electronics market, not least home goods, where there is still outsized demand. But then the bigger question is, how long is it going to take for this market to even out? And it could be a couple of years. Of course, the stocks priced in outsized growth continuing indefinitely. And just because there is a supply inelasticity argument at the present time, it doesn't mean that demand growth is going to continue to trend higher in as accelerated a manner as it did in 2020, which I think is contributing to this loss of momentum overall. But then we can also think about some of the things that are pushing up prices and carbon emissions. So that's, I think, an important factor. And it suggests that the headwind for the industrial sector, fossil fuels, chemicals, and factories and agriculture are all going to be significant because they're all significant emitters of carbon. They're all going to have to pay, and that the bill they're going to have to pay is going to double, and that's going to translate into higher prices for everything. And then we have the fact that the average hourly earnings continue to march higher. I'm going to put this up on a month-over-month basis, and it's still increasing at about a half of percent. So we had a lot of dislocation in the market back in at the middle of 2020. If we look at this on a year-over-year basis, well, we get a somewhat different chart pattern. And it looks more exaggerated. It's a 2% advance on a year-over-year basis because of that huge dislocation we had in the first and second quarters of last year. And we also get this money growth. So when we look at money supply growth on a year-over-year basis, well, then it really looks like there is a problem, and that we have this huge acceleration on the upside, where money growth on a year-over-year basis was trending higher at a 25% clip. But when we then think about this on a month-over-month basis and look at it on the same weekly chart, well, yes, we did have this incredible advance in 2020, and then it came straight back down again. Now it's still around 12.5%, and that's still higher than the prevailing levels that existed before the pandemic, but not sufficiently higher than we'd seen previously. So that's an additional reason why we're starting to see these yields coming down on treasuries, because money supply growth, it might be growing at a healthy clip, but it is not growing at nearly the same accelerated pace that we saw during the pandemic. So what we have here are some conflicting pieces of evidence to support the inflationary bias overall. Oil prices remain steady and commodity prices continue to trend higher. So we have this, the CRB index is heavily weighted by oil. When we look at raw industrial commodities, well, there is less of a weighting to the energy sector. So then it's also really accelerating higher at this stage. And prices are now coming back into the region of the peaks from back in 2011, and it's a very orderly advance. It really hasn't looked back at all. So this is clear evidence of continued support overall for the commodity complex. One of the big trends that was clearly evident in 2020 was the move in iron ore, and we've seen a significant rebound over the course of the last few sessions in iron ore prices. It suggests that there is a higher reaction low and that this is still a bull market overall. And it really does make a nonsense of the attempts by China to curtail commodity price inflation. If we're then looking at, well, and we kind of think about the question of inflation. Inflation is both a monetary and psychological phenomenon. So for the believers that inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon, then they'll be looking at money supply growth, and they'll look at bond yields, and they'll say, well, there's no inflationary problem here. And that is certainly an argument. But in order to have an inflationary issue, you need to have it trending, which is what the Federal Reserve wants. They want the inflation rate to trend overall. But more important than that, it's got to infect psychology, and it's got to make people preempt inflationary pressures by front-loading their purchases and then demanding higher wages. So we're seeing a lot of loopy data, and that is being grasped at by politicians, and I think most importantly by the media, to talk about inflation. But if we just simply then look at the month-over-month figures, well, then we can see that a lot of that is not really realistic, and that it's really just because of the comparisons with what we had last year. But then we can see the clear evidence that commodity prices are rising, and there is a clear tailwind behind them, and factory prices in China are rising, and wages in China are rising. So these are objective facts. And what it suggests is that we do have an argument for an inflationary cycle evolving, and that it is very similar to the kind of environment we had in the early 2000s, because there were fears about financial repression, and there were fears about inflationary pressures as a result of commodity prices. So it was primarily commodity-led price inflation. And that was certainly the case with oil prices surging higher. I think, though, that on this occasion it's less about oil and more about carbon pricing. So that is certainly contributing to this continued advance in inflationary pressures. And of course, we've had a significant rebound in the gold price, and gold was, and I think it has been really very steady over the course of the last couple of days. Now, it's going to have to sustain a move back above the $1,900 area and then improve upon that performance. And if it can do that, well, then we are certainly coming out of this corrective phase that's been underway now for most of the last 10 months. But the bigger rally and the breaking of the downtrend overall, those are really very encouraging signs that demand for gold is certainly starting to pick up. And then we have the gold shares. They've also broken the downtrend. They're a little overbought, so we're getting some consolidation, and it's looking likely that we're going to see a higher reaction low start to form in here. Palladium prices had been able to push on to new high ground. They have started to ease back. This is, I think, looking a little dangerous here for palladium. So it really is a big question how well it's going to hold this breakout. If we see a failed upside break and a sustained move back below the $2,500 area, then we will have a clear completed top. We obviously had the acceleration, the massive reaction against the prevailing trend, the period of right-hand extension, and then we had the breakout. And if this is still a bull market overall, that breakout will be sustained and prices will find support soon. But we also know that Norilsk Nickel's mine, which flooded and took a lot of supply out of the market, is due to open up again at the end of this month. So the share price is perking up at that prospect, but it may weigh on the palladium price overall. And of course, nickel has been underperforming because there are new sources of supply coming through. So this is it's a market where there's going to be plenty of demand, but there's also the potential for plenty of supply. Whereas when we think about copper, there's plenty of demand and then difficulty in delivering that additional supply. So the price continues to hold in a relatively similar range compared to the one put in at the beginning of this year. and this doesn't look like anything other than a consolidation in the region of the peak. So as we think about inflationary pressures, I think there are two potential sources of inflation. The first is obviously going to be from commodities, and then it's going to be about wage demand growth. So the way that people compensate themselves for the upward pressure on pricing for absolutely everything is they demand more money. And that, I think, is out there on the horizon. And even though we have lots of people that are unemployed all over the world, they are demanding more money to go back to work. Well, as the dollar, or as the bond yields start to come back down, then that is supportive of the dollar, and it was off its lows in here today. So we've continued to see little evidence of some support building here at the lower side of this range that's been forming for the last 6 months. I continue to think, though, that it is quite likely that the pricing in of the potential that the Federal Reserve is going to pull back from money printing and is going to announce a taper, which is why bond yields are starting to do better, why the dollar has been steady. Well, that is all on the assumption that the Federal Reserve is going to suggest that it's time to start talking about a taper. If, on the other hand, investors are disappointed in that hope, and we instead see that the Fed is willing to wait until they have clear evidence of inflation, and on not only on a predictive basis but with clear evidence of it, well, that would suggest that they're not going to be willing to taper their assistance for months in the future. So that would be negative for the dollar, it would be negative for bonds, and of course, then it would be positive for the stock market. So the stock market registered by the S&P 500 is pausing here in the region of the peak. As bond yields come down, then it is pricing in the potential for a taper. And the last thing that stock market investors want is a taper. As we look at the rest of the world, well, the Euro Stoxx index remains in a positive environment overall. Of course, I think we've clearly seen this divergence that's been developing over the course of the last 6 months, and it is that the rest of the world is doing better than the USA. So the MSCI World Index is continuing to push on to new high ground. When we think about the emerging markets index, despite the fact that it is heavily weighted by China, it is still consolidating here in the region of the upper side of this extremely long-term range. When we look at some of the higher growth markets like India or Vietnam, they are still exhibiting relative strength, although we are potentially now looking at the beginning of a reversion towards the mean, or at least some consolidation. Vietnam has been pausing over the last 2 days and was firmer in here today. When we think about some of the emerging European markets, well, they've been really resurgent over the last 12 months. So it's not just about Asian growth markets. The performance of a lot of the emerging markets in Europe is also very admirable. And in just the same way that China dominates emerging markets, Russia dominates EMEA. So it is rather difficult to avoid investing in those large countries. And it suggests that the frontier markets are probably going to do better. And I think when we look at some of these emerging markets and frontier market ETFs, they give a better, I think, view of just how much frontier markets have fallen over the course of the last decade. So they are really only just beginning to come off their lows. Whereas you have the emerging markets, which is dominated by China, is right in the region of its highs. Generally speaking, it is low liquidity markets tend to really pick up a bid in the early stages of a new bull market because people start looking for bargains and there's lots of liquidity floating around and it's easy to buy these things. It's when liquidity starts to ebb that it becomes difficult to sell and then they underperform in a profound manner. And one of the primary reasons that people invest in frontier markets is because of commodities, because a lot of them are commodity exporters. So if the breakouts that we're seeing in the commodity markets are sustained, that will create additional demand for more speculative stock market indices around the world. I think it's interesting that one of the best performing stock markets this year has been Mongolia. And of course, it's a big commodity exporter as a result of the Oyugo Toigoi mine, which is on the close to the border with China and is one of the biggest copper mines in the world. When we then think about the commodity producers, their currencies tend to go up when commodities are strong, and that attracts inward investment from all over the world. So Australia continues to push on to new high ground. The banking sectors in both areas also will tend to do better with capital inflows and higher yields overall. The TSX index, and I should put that in local currencies, is now right in the region of the 20,000 level, and it is quite overbought in the short term, so we may easily see some consolidation, but this is still a benign environment where we have, even though the dollar is steady around the compared to the euro, there is still ample scope for the Canadian dollar to continue to appreciate, and most particularly if energy prices continue to steady. Of course, the Canadian dollar now is right in the region of its peak from 2017, shown inversely on this chart, so it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that we see some additional pause here. But a sustained move by the dollar back above that trend mean would be required to question the potential that we're not going to see a significant advance in commodity-related currencies over the course of the next few years. We're at a critical juncture, and the dollar is the linchpin for a big bull market in ex-US equities. Well, of course, then if there's a big bull market in those commodities and in those ex-US markets, well, it's going to take a toll on the biggest beneficiaries of the high liquidity and low interest rate environment over the last decade. Amazon has at least steadied now in the region of the trend mean, so that is certainly more encouraging. But it's been ranging for nearly a year. Of course, it's not the first time it's done that, but we are at a significantly higher level than the last time it did that. Then, of course, we continue to see that Bitcoin is beginning to steady around the 30,000 level. It's a risk asset, and it tends to do better when there is enthusiasm. So we have stock markets at high levels. We have the larger companies beginning to steady. Bitcoin is certainly a lightning rod for speculation. So we continue to see that the price is holding below the trend mean around the 30,000 level. It was well off the lows yesterday, was able to follow through on the upside in here today. It's going to have to, though, sustain a move above 40,000 in order to confirm that we've seen a low of more than very short-term significance. But at least the price is more encouraging in here today. But we're in a more risky environment overall because we've had a significant loss of upward momentum. And the consistency of the prior trend has been completely unwound. So it's rather likely that we're going to have a more volatile environment. We're going to have a lot of support building and confidence rebuilding in order to encourage people back into the market in size. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.